Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Low T. Isaac. And today we're going to look at the hidden occult symbolism in Christopher Nolan's film Oppenheimer. We're going to round out part two of our Barbenheimer analysis by walking through this entire 3-hour film and talk about the symbolism that we see in the hidden occult realm of quantum. We're going to talk about Prometheus. We're going to talk about the Baphomet, the Solve and Coagula, or should I say Solve? I don't know. I'm not a 15th century alchemist, because they planted that. Christopher Nolan planted that with the ideas of fission and fusion in the film. Einstein, nerds with apocalyptic visions and how we all get to suffer because of them. Manhattan Project, commies. The XO Mark of the Beast, it was in the film. Freemasonry. The Bohemian Grove. Harry Truman. Jack Parsons. Twin Peaks, of course. And opening gateways to new worlds for the UFOs to come destroy us. Because Oppenheimer was troubled by visions of a hidden universe, I want you to join me so I can trouble you as well. Like I said, this is part two, in a way, of the Barbenheimer dual action-packed show. Because if you recall, last week my Patreon support, all my supporters, right? Patreon, VIP section, Apple Premium, Rockfin, all you guys, all the supporters, they get all the bonus goodies. And last week we did Barbie, and let me tell you, you missed out on a show. I had several comments saying it was the best show I've ever done. And that's out of over 500 episodes and counting. So, hey, listen to the audience. And as you can tell, I'm Low T. Isaac today. We forgot to hit me with my, I usually take my tee shot on Wednesday night. And we forgot it. So I'm tired. I'm Low T. And I'm not ready to put up that fight. Not yet. But let's keep going as I wake up from my slumber. We're going to get through this because there's a lot. This is going to be a long show. Get comfortable. But yeah, but we need to talk about Barbie for just 5 minutes. Right? Okay. Because I got to catch up the free feed losers because they didn't know all the Barbie stuff that we talked about for 2 hours last week. We talked about the Barbie film, and of course we talked about the occult symbolism of it, right? We talked about the ideas of patriarchy, that was the big thing. We talked about all the symbolism in the movie, Kubrick, 2001 A Space Odyssey, obviously, magic, Citizens United, portals to new worlds, the rainbow rooms, the social construct of our roles as men and women, right? And you know, just to make sure you understand who I am, I do believe there is a difference between biological sexes. That's right. I know that's controversial to say nowadays, but I also am granola enough to respect that some people feel like they identify as certain social constructs. Okay? I feel like that's the path forward on the big culture war. If a person assigned female biological traits says, look, I feel like a masculine social constructed male, that's fine. I can refer to them with he, hims. Don't bother me none. But like, let's all, but like, none of us have a role in understanding what they're, anyways, who cares? We talked about, opposing polarities. That was the big one, right? That's what I want to talk to you about. Because there's a theory I floated when I saw Barbie and I had not seen Oppenheimer yet, that we are looking at I don't want to say propaganda, but propaganda of this Barbenheimer duality, right? This was an opposing polarity play on the public. Say that 3 times fast. The male-dominated Oppenheimer versus the female-centered Barbie. And all the mouthpieces fell right for it. You know, because I picked on Ben Shapiro on the Barbie episode, because he had a 45-minute video, and I went through the whole thing. I suffered through it. And today, we're also going to blow up Ben Shapiro's argument. If you think Ben Shapiro's a smart guy, listen to the Barbie show and listen to this show, and I'm going to prove to you that he's not. Yeah, because he was crying and pissing and moaning about Barbie and women wanting their rights to decide who they want to be. And then Oppenheimer came along and he said, "No, this is what it's, this is a great movie. This is what we should be watching, guys. Everyone, come on." And I'm going to tell you why he's full of it. With my plot spoiling walkthrough of the film. Because Oppenheimer, from what I saw in the film, seemed like a real creep. Controversial opinion, I know. But that's why you come here. But yeah, so anyway. The irony here is that I thought the Barbie film actually gave us much more to talk about. And I thought that Oppenheimer was going to give me more to talk about because it's so close. Oppenheimer and the story of the atomic bomb and the Trinity site is so chocked full of, you could argue it's the heart of all the, look, because I'm a conspiracy guy, right? As you know, and I focus on the occult, alien, paranormal sort of lane within conspiracy theory. And the Trinity site, the atomic testing, I think that ties in with the alien agenda and UFOs. We're going to talk about it by the end of this show. Homunculuses, golems, Crowley. I think that's all related, but we didn't get a lot of that in the movie. Of course not, right? But what did the movie, what was it about? It was about the life and times of J. Robert Oppenheimer. This is the father of the atomic bomb, and it was based upon a book called American Prometheus, The Triumph and Tragedy of J. Robert Oppenheimer by Kai Bird and Martin Sherwin. Now, don't you fret. We're coming back to that. We're not going to casually talk about how this guy was called the Prometheus without coming back to that. Let's walk through the film of who's in it first before we spoil plots. Cillian Murphy, he plays Mr. Oppenheimer. I heard that he had prepared for the role by reading a bunch of Oppenheimer stuff. And Oppenheimer was notoriously frail and thin and gaunt. He was ultra low T Oppenheimer. So Cillian Murphy went ultra low T. He said his inspiration was Bowie. 1970s coked out Bowie. And he did end up losing a ton of weight. I heard he did some kind of method acting where he would eat a handful of nuts for dinner at a restaurant where everyone else was partying. He was by himself. He said, "No, I'm committed here." Robert Downey Jr., Iron Man himself, plays a guy named Louis Strauss. Still confused as to who he was. That's the thing I didn't like about the movie, because I love me a little, a biopic or something? Not a documentary, but I love documentaries, but I love it when they do films about real-life events. And Nolan just breezed through all these characters as if we all know who these nerds were from 90 years ago. I'm like, dude, nobody knows who these people are. And I get it. Like, maybe I should have done a little homework before I walked in. But anyway, that was one of my frustrations of the film. I'm like, bro, you keep introducing, there's like 1,000 characters in here, and you act and they assume you constantly know who they are. Like, give me a little, I don't know, a little verbal tag at the bottom when they show up for a minute. You know what I mean? Maybe I'm just stupid. Matt Damon was in there. Matt Damon. General Leslie Groves. He's the guy who's running the Manhattan Project. Emily Blunt played Kitty Oppenheimer. That's J. Robert's wife. Florence Pugh. We love Florence Pugh. She played Jean Tatlock. She was Oppenheimer's side piece. Casey Affleck. He did great, by the way. And wasn't he canceled? Didn't he do something inappropriate? I don't know if he did or didn't, but he sure did. He sure did sell me on the role he played. He had a very minor role. I mean, he was in the movie for 3 minutes. He played this role of Boris Pasch. But he was my favorite character. I was like, oh, this guy's this guy is something else, man. He really channeled whatever that is. Matthew Modine, you know, from Full Metal Jacket. He played Vannevar Bush. Not related to the Bush family. No, you would think so. Matthew Modine infamously turned down the lead role in Top Gun because he was so anti-war. So I found it curious he was in this. But there he was. And look, if you follow me on Letterboxd, which is an app where people just post film reviews, and I enjoy it immensely. If you follow me there, you saw I gave this movie 3 out of 5 stars. Much lower. I gave Barbie 4.5 because I loved Barbie. Barbie was entertaining, gave me a lot to think about, blah, blah, blah. I mean, and I gave Oppenheimer 3 stars. But look, everyone did great, as far as I can tell. I'm not a film critic. And from the top to the bottom, it seems like a beautifully shot movie, and the acting was superb and all that. But I gave it 3 stars. And we're going to come back. I'll come back to that, and maybe that's conclusion talk. So let's get into the film. Plot spoilers coming. As if you know, it's a film based on history, so who cares, right? Do you need to watch the movie before you listen to this? Not really. I mean, you already know what's going to happen. Okay, it starts off. And right off the bat, I'm in the theater, and I'm eating sunflower seeds because I'm trying to cut right now, and I can't eat another tub of popcorn. And it was awful. It's awful. But hey, I'm seeding down them, and it starts off. You got some badass sort of ethereal shots of Oppenheimer having these visions of the concept of gravity and quantum theories of the world. We got an opening credit quote. It says, Prometheus stole fire from the gods and gave it to man. For this, he was chained to a rock and tortured for eternity. I'm like, oh, dude, this is going to kick so much ass. I can't wait. Christopher Nolan, I love Christopher Nolan films. All the Batman movies, Inception, Tenet, those are all great. And right off the bat, I'm thinking, oh, Prometheus. And in fact, I didn't know that the title of the book this was based upon was called American Prometheus. So automatically, I'm like, oh my God, a Prometheus, right? And from the occult perspective, Prometheus is sort of the archetype for this idea of Lucifer, the devil, whatever, some kind of adversarial force giving technology to man from the gods so that man can become his own god, to defy God himself. So right there, right off the bat, you can see that they're framing it in the Illuminate Confirm way. But it makes sense. It's based upon the book, which has the title, but the point remains. I've talked about Prometheus many times over the years because that seems to be the archetype they want to channel. Because Prometheus best exemplifies the idea that, hey, you know, this isn't heresy. We're not trying to say man can become God. We're just trying to say that man can take some of the wisdom from God and give it to man instead of keeping man ignorant and in the dark. And that's going to come up later because there's some Freemasonic slang that gets thrown around in this movie that your boy caught. Okay? Allegedly, maybe. Maybe not. I could be wrong on that take. We'll see. So the film, it's set up in a few timelines, which I actually liked because I felt like it made the story move along pretty good, but it was confusing because it kind of jumps around, right? And he basically calls out two timelines, fission and fusion. And those are terms. Fission is about the atomic bomb and breaking apart the atom, splitting the atom. And then fusion is about nuclear fusion, pulling atoms together, I guess. That's more related to the hydrogen bomb from what I read. I don't understand these things. But what we're talking about is fission and fusion is about breaking apart and coming back together. And what we're talking about is the Baphomet, the solve and coagula. This is an alchemical term. All right, it's an alchemical approach. Because he took us on an alchemical journey in Oppenheimer, just like Barbie did. That's why Barbie started out with a direct metaphor of 2001 Space Odyssey, because that's what Kubrick was showing us in 2001 with the monolith. And of course, solve and coagulate means to break apart and join together again. It's an alchemical term. They think you can strip man down to his basic essence, the prima materia, and rebuild it in a better way to become God. See how it ties into Prometheus? Yes. It's about recreating something by tearing it down and rebuilding it. Oppenheimer ushered in a new age, a new world, which you're going to literally hear those words in this film. He brought in the new world order. But in the movie, the fission side of the movie is about Oppenheimer defending himself against this kangaroo court, they call it, who accuse him of being a communist. Fusion is about apparently problems with this guy Strauss's confirmation in the Senate. We'll come back. And you can also argue that it's literally a new world, right? When Einstein brought about this theory of relativity, quantum mechanics, he defied a lot of the concepts previously understood in the scientific community as the Newtonian mechanics, Isaac Newton, right? Because Einstein said, look, energy is matter and matter is energy, and that space-time is a fabric. And a lot of people were like, what are you talking about? And we're talking about the idea that the universe is sort of created in our mind in a ways, if you want to go to the extreme New Age aspect of this thing. Because, and let's put on my science hat here, from what I understand from a couple semesters of physics in college, because they walk you in, when you take physics in college, they walk you through the history of all things, and they start with the Newtonian mechanics and Isaac Newton's theories of physics. And it's very materialistic. It's like you've got potential energy and kinetic energy, and if you know the mass and you know the gravity because it's given, and you know the height of something, you know how much energy it's going to provide that converts from potential to kinetic and all this stuff, right? All these like very formula-derived specific things. Then, I don't know, 400 years later-ish, Einstein comes along and he publishes his books on the theory of relativity. And it sort of questions some elements, and from the way I understand it, to simplify it, Newton understood the physical world as we know it, as we see it, as we experience. Einstein was on a much more higher macro level, and he understood how the universe worked, which is totally different. And a lot of the occult magicians surely perked up. Now, Oppenheimer, he had visions of this hidden universe. They make it very clear in the movie. And I read this as he was channeling information from a higher source. This could be the Prometheus stuff, right? And you hear this often from the minds of artists, geniuses, that they channel information, they channel energy, whatever. Even Einstein's theory of relativity came to him in a vision. He had a dream where he was walking into a farmer's field and he saw a bunch of cows, and the cows ran into an electric fence and they all jumped at the same time. But he had a vision that there was a farmer across the other side of the field. The farmer sees the event, and what he sees is a ripple effect of cows jumping one at a time, like a wave. And it was one event. Two perspectives. It's like when Korn was playing at Woodstock 99. They were playing blind. And John Davis, the singer, said when they hit the part, he saw the crowd jumping in waves because the sound would hit. Because it was such a huge crowd, the sound would sort of ripple through. It would have to propagate through the various speakers. And the crowd would all jump when it reached their speaker. So, anyways, Oppenheimer, he's a student. One of the teachers is picking on him. And look, this is going to be a very factual, checked film analysis here, okay? Well, the teacher's picking on him. And there's apparently, I think Niels Bohr has a lecture going on And the teacher picks on him and says, look, Oppenheimer, you stay behind and clean up. The rest of the class, we're all going to the lecture. So Oppenheimer takes cyanide and injects it into the professor's apple. He's going to kill the professor for making fun of him. That's that nerd anger. That's why when I sell those shirts, I say, these nerds are going to kill us. Which I've got some left. Go to gumroad.com/IsaacW. Get your own podcast logo shirt to profess your love for the Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture podcast. He's got nerd anger and he's going to kill the guy. Because that's the problem with nerds. They have no emotional connection to humanity. Controversial take, but it's the truth. And I know, because I myself am a nerd. I went to college for engineering. I hung out with a lot of engineers over the years, and I witnessed a lot of things I didn't like. And I thought, oh my God, these nerds are going to kill us. You think Elon Musk is a well-rounded person? You think Zuckerberg is a well-rounded person? No, they're nerds. And they have a disdain for humanity, and there's something wrong with them. Now, apparently, this whole thing about the apple is not true. Oppenheimer's grandson, Charles, told Time magazine it's simply not true. Quite the bold move by Christopher Nolan, in my opinion. Why you would do this, I don't know. I don't know why this isn't more controversial. I'm like, bro, right at the beginning of the movie, I'm looking around like, so the guy's going to murder his teacher? What's wrong with him? And it made me think of the story about the godfather of computer science, Alan Turing. He was secretly gay, and he committed suicide by eating an apple that he had injected with cyanide, which is kind of weird when you look at the logo for the Apple brand. It's an apple with a bite taken out of it, and it's obviously a computer. Or people say it's the Garden of Eden. And again, that ties us into the Prometheus Luciferian idea of the serpent tempting Adam and Eve with the apple. Could be that angle too. Could be, Nolan showing us a bit of that. There's a good quote. And look, I didn't catch who said it. I watched the movie twice. I watched the movie twice. A 3-hour movie. I watched it twice for you. And there's only so much I can jot down. Someone tells Oppenheimer, they're like, look, it's not about can you read the music, it's can you hear the music? Which I thought was pretty good. And it's all about how Oppenheimer sees the world in a very peculiar way. It flashes several images, and some of these images include he's reading a book called The Wasteland. I looked it up. It's a famous poem by T.S. Eliot. And I'm far too uncultured to pretend to know what it's about. So here's the Wikipedia take. It says, Eliot's poem combines the legend of the Holy Grail and the Fisher King with vignettes of contemporary British society. Eliot employs many allusions to the Western canon. Ovid's Metamorphoses, Dante's Divine Comedy, Shakespeare, Milton, Buddhist scriptures, the Hindu Upanishads, and even a contemporary popular song, The Shakespearean Rag. You know the popular song, The Shakespearean Rag. It's everyone's favorite. There's a couple interesting takes out of there. Ovid is referenced in Eyes Wide Shut, remember? At the beginning, when old boy's trying to bang Nicole Kidman, he references Ovid. Ovid? I don't know. Holy Grail, obviously interesting from the conspiratorial perspective that they claim there's a bloodline of Jesus, and that's what the Holy Grail is. From Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code series. So Oppenheimer, he's tripping, right? He's trying to figure out the universe. He's smashing these glasses. He's going deep. And you know what? Mathematics and physics, it's kind of like that. I spent many years studying it, and that's why Pythagoras was really into this stuff. There is some kind of weird, what feels like a language of God. I don't know. Once you get buried into this stuff and you start understanding it, I remember taking differential equations, and all math is so confusing at the beginning. But once you dial it in, man, and you understand how the equations work, I remember just it's like you're Neo in the Matrix and you start dodging the blocks. They start blocking punches. It's kind of weird. It's kind of how computer programming is sometimes. Once you get buried into the code and you really, get attuned to it, you kind of zone out. So Oppenheimer, he meets with Louis Strauss. That's Robert Downey Jr.'s character. He is the head of the Atomic Energy Commission that they refer to as the AEC in the movie. He just says he runs the institute. I had to look it up. I think he's referring to the Institute for Advanced Study at Princeton. All we know is he's trying to get Oppenheimer to work for him. This is apparently post-Manhattan Project. I don't know. The timelines get kind of confusing to me. It doesn't really matter in the sense of what I'm going to talk to you about today. So don't at me. Don't correct me here. I don't know. We see Einstein hanging out on this campus. Oppenheimer goes to talk to him. Says something. We don't know what. We're going to find out later. Then we see Einstein meet Mugging Strauss. I'm like, oh, what's that about? We got the fission scene, and this is a different kind of flashback. This is of him defending himself. What we see is Oppenheimer giving a lecture in Europe, and he's speaking Dutch, which apparently he actually did. He learned Dutch just to give a lecture about quantum physics. Then we see him teaching at Caltech in Berkeley. Caltech, of course, interesting because of Jack Parsons being there. He started JPL Labs there. And Oppenheimer starts teaching quantum theory. He meets a bunch of new nerds. He's explaining it for the audience. He says, hey, how can light be a particle and a wave at the same time? We don't know. It's a paradox. But it works in the world of quantum. And quantum's really weird like that, right? You get the story of Schrodinger's cat, where there is a sort of observer effect on things. Things change once you focus your attention on them. And that was one of the big problems with science, was how do you remove the subjective observer experience? How do you do that? And quantum says, like, it's part of the equation. I was like, what? You know? You got law of entanglement, like two things stay connected over distances somehow, spooky action at a distance, all kinds of crazy stuff. But Oppenheimer, he theorizes about black holes. Apparently, before it was known, I thought Einstein had already covered that, but I don't know, maybe not. But while he's at Berkeley, he's embracing a lot of these communist socialist sort of things, these vibes. He wants to make a teachers union, and all the people there hate it. And that was a big part of the film, was how he was a communist. He would go to these, well, he was had communist interests. He would go to these commie gatherings with his brother Frank. It's where he met a guy named Hakan Cavalier. But he seemed like he was more in, from the film, he's more interested in being anti-fascism than he was being pro-communism. Which I can get that. Because at the time it was like, you know, Nazis were in Germany doing their really fascist, terrible stuff. He meets Florence Pugh's character, Jane, and she's like, bro, she questions if he's communist enough. And they have a conversation about how property is in communism. Property is theft, meaning it is not yours. You do not possess anything, which is a real, you know, and you can see why American capitalism hates this idea. They hate it. I hate it too, to be fair. But think about it. You own property. You own a house. Like, you own the land. You don't own that land. The government owns it. The people own that. Because that's human nature. Human nature is to be greedy. So you've got to balance that out. You got to have the balance of the communism and the capitalism together to make it work. But capitalism gives you the illusion of owning something. So it's not really truly capitalist and free market. You don't own that land. So anyhow, Oppenheimer, he has sexy time with her. And some sexy commie time with Jane. That's Florence Pugh's character. And you can hear, so there's a part where she pulls out a book off of his shelf, and it's written in Sanskrit or something. And she says, hey, why don't you read me? Can you read this? And he's like, yeah, baby girl, I can read it so good. And she says, well, read it to me. And it's basically the Bhagavad Bhagavad Gita. Oh boy, you know what I'm saying. If you're an Ancient Aliens fan, you already know, because that's the one where they talk about the UFOs. I want to say tulpas, but that's not it. Anyway, doesn't matter. He reads the infamous quote, "I am death, the destroyer of worlds," while they're having sex. Now, this is a teaser for later, because there's sex magic vibes in that entire idea of that whole scene. So they start, so they show they have this relationship, right? They start talking about splitting atoms and maybe starting chain reactions of atoms splitting to create a bomb, the atomic bomb. And the Americans are worried that the Germans are going to get this done first. So here comes Vannevar Bush, some guy, all I call, his name was Richard. I don't know. Like I said, Nolan wasn't really interested in making sure we understood who the characters were. He just assaulted us with them. So Oppenheimer, he meets Kitty, and that's played by Emily Blunt. She's already married. She's married, but homeboy's going to pull the robbery while he's also seeing Jane, Florence Pugh's character. All right? Are we tracking? Lots of infidelities happening here. The sanctity of marriage in the 40s, apparently not much better than it is today. Ben Shapiro, of course, oblivious to all of these things. Because he's just a dummy, spoon-fed things to tell you, right? These people don't have independent thoughts in their head. They just push a narrative because they get paid to do it, and they get paid well. And that's what they do. So Oppenheimer tries to unionize the professors at, I think it's Berkeley at this point. But Josh Harnett's character named Ernest Lawrence, who was already on the Manhattan Project, they're beefing about it. They're beefing because Ernest Lawrence says this is communism, this union idea. And he's like, look, Oppenheimer, they're going to never let you in on our secret little project unless you quit it with this socialist stuff. And Oppenheimer's like, fine, I'll knock it off. Let me in. So they let him in. Meanwhile, Robert Downey Jr., a.k.a. Strauss, he apparently said something about how dangerous it was to ship isotopes to Norway or something. And he's testifying at, I think, Congress. And Oppenheimer makes him look like a fool. Oppenheimer says something about how silly that is because you could eat sandwiches with isotopes. I don't know. It was apparently a big embarrassment for Strauss. And that is the origin of the beef between Strauss and Oppenheimer that Oppenheimer doesn't even know about. Okay. Next. Oppenheimer, we're only 40 minutes into the movie at this point, folks. Oppenheimer comes home to celebrate getting on the secret project, but his baby that he's got, and again, the story jumps around in time frames. At this point, he's married to Kitty, because he, in fact, does steal her from her husband, and he comes home to celebrate being on this new project, but their baby is crying. Oppenheimer is like, look, chick, you better do something about that noise. And she says, and she's tripping. She's like, dude, I've been dealing with a screaming baby all day. It's your turn. So what does he do? He snatches up their two-month-old baby and drops it off at a friend's house and says, you take care of this for a while. That's right. That's right. That's what, you know, it's funny because Barbie shows us claims there's a patriarchy, and that's debatable, right? If that's still the same case today, for sure in the 40s it was, and people like Ben Shapiro lose their minds. There's no such thing. This is BS. There's no patriarchy. Then Oppenheimer shows us life in the 1940s, and I mean, you can't argue the irony here. Oppenheimer drops the baby off at someone else. His baby, his two-month-old baby, is crying, and it's annoying to him. So he drops it off at a friend's house, and the friend is just like, you know what? You're an important guy. I think I'll do that. I'll take care of your kid for you. I mean, I don't know. Is that the traditional family values we're supposed to go back to? Is that what they want? I mean, that seems kind of odd to me. I mean, I don't have kids, but I would think that if I did, I wouldn't drop him off at a friend's house and be like, here, I don't want to take care of this kid. He's screaming. You deal with it. Interesting. Interesting take. So then we meet Matt Damon's character, Leslie Groves. Great character, by the way. He tells Oppenheimer that he's like, look, I'm the guy that designed the Pentagon, and I want you to be the director of the Manhattan Project. We're going to come back to this later. And again, timelines are jumping all over the place. And so some of this might be hard to follow. Trust me, I was in the movie theater twice trying to follow it, and it was hard. Oppenheimer explains to Matt Damon, Leslie Groves says, okay, what you should do to build the bomb is to build a town in New Mexico. We'll name it Los Alamos. And what we'll do is we're going to refine plutonium and uranium in different parts of the country, and we're going to connect them all with a railway. And he demonstrates this on a chalkboard, and when he does it, he draws a big circle, and then he puts a big X in the center of it. Now, this, if you go down the rabbit hole of conspiracy theory, that is the symbol for the mark of the beast. And I'm going to explain this in great detail. I've got a show about Elon Musk and how he converted Twitter to X, because it's symbolic of the mark of the beast and the Antichrist. I've actually already recorded it, and it goes very deep, and I think a lot of it's going to go over a lot of people's heads, which is why I'm hesitant to put it out, because I'm like, I don't know, did I go too deep in the weeds of this one? And then I thought, okay, well, I'll put out the Barbie show. I'll put the Oppenheimer show. Those are the hot topics. And then maybe the next week. So I don't know. I might redo it. I don't know. We'll see. But I'm going to go deep into the Mark of the Beast. So stay subscribed to the show, because we got more coming. Elon Musk, Twitter, or X, or whatever it's called now. There you go. So he demonstrated. And I'm going to put the photo that I'm talking about on Instagram, at Isaac Weishaupt. Like and subscribe. You can see the image of the Mark of the Beast in Oppenheimer. And ironically, because unleashing the nuclear forces does in fact mean it could be the apocalypse and the end of the world and ushering in the end times, right? In a way, that could be what this is. And in fact, they're calling Oppenheimer the Prometheus, which is the archetypal sort of Luciferian Antichrist himself. So Oppenheimer says, look, this is about unleashing the strong force before the Nazis do. This is physics geek talk, all right? I want to explain what that is, because there's four forces in nature. You've got nuclear strong, nuclear weak, electromagnetism, and gravity. Nuclear strong is the force that he is talking about. It's the force that holds the atom's nucleus together, right? You got your protons and your neutrons. Another idea you can consider is that we're talking about the attraction of opposing polarities in a way. Positive and negative, because the nucleus has the positive force of the protons, and the negative charged electrons are held at a distance using the force of gravity, I believe. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. The reason I'm talking about it is because I always talk about Twin Peaks, and in Twin Peaks, you'll find that the force of electromagnetism plays a crucial role, as well as the force of the strong nuclear. All right. Oppenheimer, he's recruiting his team, and he asks some guy to join, but dude's leery about passing the security check. Now, I tried to figure out who this character was. I have no idea. Very frustrating. I went on IMDb and everything. I have no idea who he was talking to. But what he says is, and I quote, Oppenheimer says, oh, so you're a fellow traveler. So you're a fellow traveler. So what? This is a national emergency. They need us. And the guy says, yeah, until they don't. Because he knows Oppenheimer's going to get played. Very prophetic. Now, the reason we're going to talk about this term is because it's a phrase they use to describe. It's oftentimes a phrase used politically to say, like, hey, we're on the same political team here, right? But it also sounds very similar to a Freemasonic term. And that Freemasonic term is, are you a traveling man? And they say it represents the journey from dark to light. And it derives from ancient Egypt, where the Freemasons were the only ones allowed to travel between towns going to different work sites. And today, in what they refer to as the speculative Freemasonry, it's the polarity talk of the black and the white. And it's always about seeking the light, represented as the sun or the blazing star of Sirius. All right. It's kind of a deep term, but when someone asks, are you a traveling man? That's a Freemasonic term. And Oppenheimer says, oh, so you're a fellow traveler. Is it a Freemasonic reference in the film? I can't quite tell. It seems like it's probably more related to the communist aspect and political talk, to be fair. Then we get a scene with the infamous calculation from Teller that is about the possibility of this chain reaction continuing to react and ripple through the atmosphere and basically destroying the entire planet with all of us on it, of course. They ultimately run the formulas a couple times and decide it's closer to near zero, so let's just let her rip. Now, Edward Teller, same guy, says we should build a bigger bomb, a hydrogen bomb. And this was a sticking point for Oppenheimer, apparently. Strauss wanted to now use military might and bigger bombs and weapons to beat the Soviets in the upcoming Cold War. Oppenheimer thought it was too speculative. He wanted us to sort of find a cooperative way of all getting along. So then there's a scene where Strauss is back at the congressional hearing or confirmation hearing, I guess. And he references back to when Oppenheimer was giving him grief about saying that the isotopes were dangerous. And he goes, you know what the problem with these engineers are, these nerds, these scientists, is if you question them, they get very defiant. And he's absolutely right. That's the nerd anger, okay? And again, I can say that because not only am I an engineer who's worked with engineers, but I am also a nerd, all right? And sometimes with nerd culture, if you don't diffuse the anger, it builds up. And then you get the nerd anger, that scorched the earth anger. So they keep working on the atomic bomb. Oppenheimer fighting for his security clearance. Everyone's questioning his communist liberal leanings and his relationships with commies like his brother Frank, his commie lover Jane Tatlock. I think even his wife was a communist or in a communist group at some point in the film. Meanwhile, he kept stooping Jane, and then Jane eventually kills herself. In a bathtub, no less, right? We all know about the conspiracies about the bathtub and the passage of the goddess and the cleansing rituals. I didn't see anything that implied that that's what we were looking at here exactly. Boris Bash, that's the, what's the Ben Affleck guy's brother? Jesse Affleck, what's his damn name? And it's the guy I was going on and on about how much I loved his character. He's questioning Oppenheimer, and Matt Damon's character, General Groves or whatever, tells Oppenheimer, like, look, if that guy's questioning you, that's bad news, bro. That dude's cold blood. He's got ice in his veins. He's the son of a Russian Orthodox bishop who went over and killed a bunch of Soviets. And it was a really cool scene, right? Casey Affleck, that's his name. But that was the really cool scene that I was talking about. Yeah, cool story, bro. They have a... I didn't sell you on that scene too good. Hey, I'm doing my best over here. They have a Christmas party, and they bring in a guest of honor. Who is it? No clue. I don't know that they even said his name. We were just supposed to know who he was. What I got of it, I thought he said he was Heisenberg's teacher. Niels or something? I don't know. That's what I have in my notes. No clue. But anyways, this guy, the guest of honor, he pulls Oppenheimer aside and tells him that this nuclear power, this bomb, is going to change the entire world. He says, it's not a new weapon, it's a new world, all right? And he calls Oppenheimer the American Prometheus in this scene. And recall my ranting about the Baphomet, Solve, and Coagula, the fission and the fusion. Because that's what this is, the nuclear age, the new world, the new world order. Maybe all this geopolitical talk about the new world order is really about unleashing Luciferian forces through the American Prometheus. Call me crazy. You know, they did that Trinity atomic bomb testing in July 1945, and what happened right after? We had a UFO crash. Then we had another one in 47 at Roswell. They unleashed the powers. Oppenheimer gets into it with Strauss and why he shouldn't make this hydrogen bomb. Again, Strauss says stuff about how, he's like, look, how's Truman going to reassure the American people unless we make a bigger, better bomb than the Russians? The Soviets, I guess, is what he said. Oppenheimer says, well, we're going to do it by limiting nuclear weapons through international control of nuclear energy through the United Nations, a global sort of policing force. He says, and then Strauss says, it's not fascism that threatens our survival, it's communism, which was a very much the tone of all the boogeymen from the 40s, 50s, 60s, and so on. All the little spot where the government was doing dirty stuff and not telling nobody, FBI, COINTELPRO, all those things. It was all in the name of making sure that communism didn't affect us all. We finally hear Oppenheimer name this test Trinity. He says, better my heart, three person to God, which is a poem from a guy named Don, D-O-N-N-E. We'll come back to that. There's discussion about whether or not they should actually let the Japanese, or whether or not they should actually bomb the Japanese, because at this point, the Germans had already surrendered. It was already over with the Germans, and they also were questioning whether or not they should let the Soviets know, like, hey, we built a nuclear bomb, we're going to drop it on these fools. But then they're worried at the same time, they're like, I know we're allies with the Soviets right now, but they're kind of our enemy because of communism. Oppenheimer kept pushing for mutual trust, even not using the bomb on the Japanese, but all the military types are like, nah, we're going to do it. That's what we're doing. So Oppenheimer and the fellas, they're preparing for the test. Oppenheimer climbs this big-ass tower. I read he did that in real life, 100-foot tower up a ladder. He has a nice little intimate moment with the bomb, Gadget. I think it's called Gadget. He's more intimate with the bomb than his wife at any point in this movie. Not as intimate as he was with Jane. So we finally make it. We finally make it to the atomic bomb scene. And boy, Nolan really lays on the suspense thick. Real thick. I got anxiety. I'm in my chair like, oh man, here we go. They talk about the site being called Trinity. The movie implies that it's from the poetry of that John Donne. This is a subject we talked about in my David Grush UFO whistleblower show, where we talked about Trinity being used at the Jornada del Muerto, Journey of the Dead, which is also next to another infamous crash at Socorro. I forgot to mention that one. And there's a big black obelisk at the Trinity site as we speak. And we were talking about how Trinity was chosen by Oppenheimer for reasons that aren't entirely 100% sure from what I've read. A lot of people think it's a reference to the Christian Trinity through his love of the poet John Donne. And on Wikipedia, it says this for the poem. It says, as west and east in all flat maps, and I am one, are one, so death doth touch the resurrection. Now, it's interesting, now that I watch this movie, turns out Jane Tadlock, that's Florence Pugh's character, the commie side piece, she introduced Oppenheimer to the poetry of this John Donne guy. And some people even alleged he's actually naming the Trinity site in honor of her. Right? Must have really burned up his wife if she knew. So back to the actual the atomic test, right? We're ready for it. And it happens. And it's silent. Well, let me talk about the setup first. So apparently he used real explosives, not a nuclear explosion, but real explosive instead of CGI. So, you know, points for that, right? He said there's no CGI in the whole film. So, like, you got to respect that. And apparently, it's true that when they were setting up to do the bomb testing, that bad weather came through. So they really did delay the weather. And Oppenheimer, in the movie, he prophetically says, it'll clear out in an hour. And Groves is like, it better, or I'm going to kick your ass. All right. But in reality, apparently it was a meteorology team led by a guy named Jack Hubbard, who knew that the forecast was going to clear up, of no relation to L. Ron Hubbard, from what I can tell. And they're talking, so Leslie Groves, General Groves, Matt Damon, he's talking to Oppenheimer right before, and he finally hears about this near zero chance of annihilation. And they reduce it to a joke, and Groves walks out, he's like, try not to destroy the world. Like, well, I'm glad you guys are really, I don't know, it just seems wild, right? And thank God it didn't happen, I guess. Maybe it didn't, we don't even know it. We're living in a parallel reality, who knows? But anyways, this is the scene where you get the, okay, so you get this countdown, right? You're in your little chair, your heart's beating in your chest. You're like, oh my God, it's been 2 hours. I'm ready for full face melt. The bomb goes off. Silence. You get visuals for maybe a minute. Then you hear the explosion because, you know, the speed of sound is slower than sight. So that's how it really happened. They could see it before they felt it. And it's over. It's like a minute. Like not even a minute in the movie. All this buildup. And for what? I went to the theater fully expecting this to be a life-altering experience of the horror of an atomic explosion. And it was a total letdown. Worse yet, I look at the clock. I'm like, damn, I got another hour left? What are we going to talk about for an hour? Oh, the suffering. If you want to see a real mind-bending atomic explosion, you already know where we're going, folks. Twin Peaks Season 3, Episode 8. Now, you'd need to watch every episode leading up to that to fully appreciate it, but if you're 100% sure you're never going to watch any of that, just watch the scene, and you'll know why I think Christopher Nolan screwed the pooch on this. That's right. And what bugs me is Christopher Nolan's the kind of guy who, because a lot of people complain about the dialogue is hard to hear, which I didn't actually find in this movie, but when you watch movies at home, unless you got some crazy nerd audio setup, you can't hear what's going on. You got to read with subtitles, which just sucks. And Christopher Nolan's the kind of guy that says, well, I don't care. I didn't make it for poor people at home on their phones. I made it for a theater with maximal technology, IMAX. Like, sit your ass in the theater and you know, feel it, right? That's kind of how he is. So I'm like, bro, you drug me into this theater for 30 seconds? It wasn't even that interesting. But, you know, there's no CGI, so you gotta respect that. One time I went to in Salt Lake City, they have a place, I can't think of the name, it's some, like, astronomy center thing, and they had, up top, they have this dome, and they had a black hole movie. I drug Josie to see this thing, and the idea was, like, it's a full sort of IMAX thing, and it was like, you're gonna experience what it's like to go into a black hole. And I was like, oh, I'm down for that. And it was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. I wanted that. I wanted a taste of that. I was like, this sucks. I almost threw my stuff at the screen. Boo! Boo! Anyway, this is the scene where Oppenheimer recites the Bhagavad Gita, and he says, now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds. And it's interesting that earlier they depict it happening during sexy time, during commie sexy time, when he recited it also. So is Nolan telling us there's an element of sex magic? I mean, they weren't doing magic. They're just having sex, but whatever. Is there an element of sex magic with the nukes? Like, he connects the two. He connects the two. Because in the occult, sex magic is the heart of all operations. It's a hidden force. It's a gateway to other worlds. Is he showing us that from two perspectives? I'd argue maybe he is. And if he's not, I am. All right. So Oppenheimer, he starts tripping out now. The devil's been unleashed, right? And he goes to this pretty cool scene that probably the best scene in the movie, where he experiences sort of what the victims of the atomic bomb will experience. Okay, we're moving along. He goes to President Truman's office now that it's been a great success and they've bombed Japan and the war is over. And Oppenheimer, he's talking to Truman about his concerns with the future of nuclear weapons. And he's, again, pushing this global cooperation idea, right? There's that communism we're talking about. And, you know, especially if we're talking about building hydrogen bombs, which are, you know, I think they make a reference in the movie. They're like, what does it matter if you drown in 10 feet of water or 10,000 feet of water? Like, either way, whatever, right? But it's all mental, like, who's got the biggest swinging bomb, right? So Truman asks Oppenheimer. So Truman's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, what should we do with this Los Alamos town that you created? And Oppenheimer's like, give it back to the Indians, which wasn't very woke. It's Native American, but it's the 40s, right? And Truman's pissed. He's like, bro, you are not on the right team here. And then Oppenheimer says, look, I feel like I've got blood on my hands. And Truman mocks him. Played by Gary Oldman, by the way, did great. He calls Oppenheimer a crybaby. He kicks him out of the office. He says, don't let that crybaby back in here. Ouch. And apparently that was a real thing. Truman really called him a crybaby. But in reality, what I read was Oppenheimer was actually cool with building a hydrogen bomb. So I don't know how much of this is true. The film makes it look like he was really on some hippie commie vibes. But apparently it was more of a practical thing. Like, he thought if we were building a hydrogen bomb, it's just going to take away resources that we could build more atomic bombs, which was a proven technology. So maybe he was looking at it from a technological risk standpoint. I should read a book, maybe. Maybe I could find that out, but I'm not going to. But at this point, the movie loses a ton of steam. A ton of steam. This last hour, I'm just like, oh, bro, wake me up when it's over. But, you know, that's in my opinion. What do I know? I'm a guy who loves Spring Breakers, so I always keep that in mind. But to me, the whole last hour is just a lot more of the same. It's, is Oppenheimer a communist? Yes. No. Yes. No. Back and forth, right? Strauss, real shady guy. Okay, got it. Oppenheimer feels bad that the military does what the military was going to do the whole time. And this goes on for like an hour, right? It's fine. I have a short attention span sometimes. I get impatient. We already saw the bomb. That was what I came here for, basically. And I'm ready to leave. I'm like, bro, we get it. I'm ready to leave now. Please let me go now. So we're watching Strauss go through the confirmation hearing. It blows up in his face. Pun intended. One of the scientists exposes how Strauss was actually pulling all these strings. It's the guy who played Freddie Mercury. He's in this movie. He's another nerd. And he's testifying in Congress at the confirmation hearing about how bad Strauss is. He's like, yeah, Strauss is making all these political moves, throwing everyone under the bus just to get ahead. And they deny his confirmation, and Strauss is embarrassed. And he asks his little advisor helper guy, he's like, well, who voted against me? And Strauss gets dunked on by none other than a young John F. Kennedy. That's right. And that was a curious twist. In fact, there's parallels here between Oppenheimer's liberal commie stance and JFK. I'm going to read you from Politico, because just 2 months before, in 63, 2 months before JFK was assassinated on September 20th, he gave a speech at the United Nations General Assembly where he offered to mount a joint manned lunar program with the Soviet Union. I read about this in Dark Mission, but I fact checked it. Dark Mission, written by Richard Hoagland and Mike Barra. So, I'm going to read you from Politico. Kennedy's proposal that the rival superpowers cooperated on a mission to mount an expedition to the moon caught the Soviet leadership and many Americans off guard. Towards the end of his address, Kennedy said, in a field where the United States and the Soviet Union have a special capacity, space, there is room for new cooperation, for further joint efforts. I include among these possibilities a joint expedition to the moon. So my thing was Christopher Nolan pushing a little taste of JFK disclosure? Like, we're going to find out more about this? I don't know. So the movie's finally wrapping up. We finally hear what Einstein and Oppenheimer were talking about before Strauss came walking around and got mean mugged. It was about the idea of the atomic bomb ending the world through a chain reaction. And Oppenheimer says, I think we already did that, right? And it was a pretty cool ending because you see this nuclear annihilation happening. He has a vision of this nuclear annihilation happening all over the globe for a second. So the ending was pretty cool, you know, 7 out of 10 ending. But, you know, I was checking out all the talkie-talkie. I was like, bro, I just got to take a leak. Let's go. So in conclusion, let's wrap it up. And I got a lot to talk about. Oh, I'm talking so much today. It's a long conclusion, but let's get into it. In conclusion, there's a lot to cover here. All right, let's start with who won the Barbenheimer War. I liked Barbie better. As an entertainment piece, it was way more entertaining. And I know you already think, oh, Isaac and his liberal granola, OG alkaline nonsense. Of course he liked Barbie better. Yeah, I did. And it's not politically motivated. I wanted to see Oppenheimer way more than I wanted to see Barbie. I would have seen Oppenheimer first, but the situation was that I couldn't. And I love Christopher Nolan films. I really do. Plus, I'm super interested in the atomic bomb, the Trinity site, explosives, all that, right? And I love biopic-type films about real stories and real people. So, I mean, you know, I just felt like it could have been a better movie. And when I say better, I should clarify that because I feel like from a cinematography, a film critic angle, like the acting was great and it seemed like it was probably a great put together movie. And it was a good movie. It was an interesting movie. It was good. Definitely good. I just didn't feel nearly as entertained as I wanted it to be. I mean, it was 3 hours. But I definitely don't regret watching it at all. I mean, don't get it wrong. But I wouldn't watch it again. It's not Inception or Batman even. I'd watch those. But Oppenheimer definitely had better trailers than Barbie. They had a Bob Marley movie coming out that looks good. They have an Exorcist movie coming out. Are you kidding me? I can't wait for that. Also, this movie's about the military-industrial complex using these guys for their own power, which you hear about in the movie. That's what the one dude, the Freemason guy, was saying. He's like, bro, they're just going to use you, so I'm not interested. Thanks, though. Truman calls him a crybaby. Like, okay, Truman, why don't you go build an atomic bomb? You're so smart. Because there's this weird psychopathic tendency people have when they get enough power under them. They think they're hot stuff, right? The body counts don't keep you up at night anymore. You're above that. You've elevated yourself to godlike status. And that's why they get into these occult practices to become gods. Also note that it's interesting because a lot of people don't believe in conspiracy because they say, look, the government's so inefficient and incompetent, they could never keep a secret. But this is the example where they're absolutely wrong. You had multiple refinement plants around the country with uranium, plutonium. You had an entire town built in Los Alamos. And even the nuclear test, they found a way to hide that. The government planted a story that said it was a ammunition magazine that exploded, an igloo in the bomb dump, they would call that in the military ordnance world. There was 120,000 people working on the Manhattan Project. And only a few knew what was really going on. And this is exactly what David Icke is talking about when he gives you the understanding about how the world works with the pyramid structure. You keep the mouth breathers on the bottom, and only the people at the top know what's going on. You keep us distracted at the bottom, so you keep doing what you want to do at the top. The movie was also about the quantum world, which is referred to as the hidden world, which by definition makes it occult, the Latin word for hidden. And the ideas you hear about in Oppenheimer, about how he talks about how matter, you know, all things are kind of empty. Space is held by gravitational pull of atoms towards each other. So when you think you're touching an object, that's not really true, right? And I know it's weird to think about all this, but if you take a physics course, it seems like that's what it is, right? It's really weird. Some say it's peering into the mind of God. And there's a lot of overlaps between the conspiracy theory world, the occult, New Age, and quantum physics. I went down this road pretty far. You could argue I'm still there in a way. I started with What the Bleep Do We Know, a documentary, which then I read the book. Then I got into Dr. Joe Dispenza's work. Man, throwing some hallucinogens, and oh boy, I don't know what's going on anymore, right? Next, you got the idea of bloodlines and elites and connecting to the big conspiracies. Bohemian Grove, not in the movie. They really blew it there, too. That was another thing that disappointed me. I was like, come on, bro. You're not even going to put a Bohemian Grove scene in here? Because you probably already know if you listen to me long enough. You know what Bohemian Grove is, where they get together every year, all the elites, they have the boys club. Alex Jones infiltrated it. Check out his video from 30 years ago. They get together. They do a psychodrama ritual, the cremation of care ceremony to this giant owl. It's a trip. But Manhattan Project was conceived of at Bohemian Grove. This is as basic as Wikipedia. They even mention it, so you know it's super true. It says the Grove is particularly famous for a Manhattan Project planning meeting that took place in September 1942, which subsequently led to the atomic bomb. Those attending this meeting included Ernest Lawrence, J. Robert Oppenheimer, the S1 executive committee heads, such as the president of Harvard, Yale, and Princeton, along with representatives of Standard Oil and General Electric, as well as various military officials. At the time, Oppenheimer was not an S1 member, although Lawrence and Oppenheimer hosted the meeting. So the movie paints one picture, but in reality, I think, okay, was Oppenheimer really concerned about the military-industrial complex? Or was he out there partying with the Rockefellers from Standard Oil, GE, Bonesman from Yale, Skull and Bones, the Bush family? I wasn't there, so I don't know. There's a photo, and I'll put this on the Instagram too. There's a photo of the S1 committee at Bohemian Grove, dated September 13th, 1942. And it shows some of the characters from the movie. You see Josh Hartnett's Ernest Lawrence character, Steve Coulter's James Conant. There's another guy in there named Carl Compton, who would end up taking over the director of the Office of Strategic Scientific Research and Development after Vannevar Bush, who was in the movie. It's a who's who. Leslie Groves, they mention how he built the Pentagon. Well, the Pentagon has a lot of symbolism, so it's interesting he's the guy who built it. He, it's the shape of the inside of a star, which is the pentagram, which is one of the oldest symbols of mankind. Pythagoreans used it as their symbol because they were very much into sacred geometry and understanding the mind of God. They were the first secret society, so on and so on. The Wiccans say it means life, the unity of all things. But was Leslie Groves Illuminati confirmed? I don't know, but he was plugged in. He was plugged in for sure. So interesting that there's all these ties to Bohemian Grove, the Pentagon, Groves, Oppenheimer, all that. Truman, President Truman. We talked about Truman in the Grey Lodge in the Twin Peaks episodes. Because in Twin Peaks, there's a sheriff named Harry Truman, played by Michael Ankin. And we talked about his Illuminate confirmedness with my Grey Lodge episode about the pilot of Twin Peaks. Because Truman was the president when his Secretary of Defense, James Forrestal, established Majestic 12, the MJ-12. He started researching the UFOs way back when. He was the 33rd president, a 33rd degree Freemason. He's the one who renamed Boulder Dam back to Hoover Dam. Enrico Fermi, he was in the movie. He was an Italian physicist who moved to America. He was the architect of the nuclear age and built the first nuclear reactor, which I think you might see in Oppenheimer. I think that's what they're showing us in the one scene. But he's the famous scientist who wrote the Fermi's paradox. It says the universe is so big and it's been around for so long, there's intelligent life out there for sure, outside of Earth. But the paradox is, well, where are they? High likelihood of ET extraterrestrial life, zero evidence. Well, he left Italy in 1938. They had some racial laws. His wife was Jewish. He came to America, worked on the Manhattan Project. He was there at the Trinity test, July 16th, 1945. The reason I bring him up is because we talked about him on, I did two shows on David Grush, that UFO whistleblower. Because Grush referred to the UFO crash in Italy in 1933 that arguably started all of this. There was a UFO stored in the hangars in Machete, and I'm not pronouncing that right. Mussolini called it the unconventional flying vehicle, and he thought it was like French or British or German secret weapon. But Marconi believed it was extraterrestrial in nature. And there was this the RS-33 cabinet, according to the mysterious sender of the material I'm reading from the Black Vault, sorry. But anyways, the point is there was multiple UFO sightings between 33 and 1940 in Italy. Blah, blah, blah. They had Saturn-shaped UFOs, flying cigars, and so on, right? But the reason I bring that up is because that was in 1933. That's the first instance that we know of a crashed craft. And there was a theory I read on Reddit, which means it must be true, that Fermi began researching neutron bombardment in 1934, right after Italy retrieved this UFO crash. So, again, you've got a UFO technology arguably showing us the path to the nuclear forces. It's a valid theory. Let's go back to Barbie now. Because in the Barbie conclusion, we talked about many ideas. That was a 2-hour show we did. And a couple of big ones overlap with Oppenheimer, so let's recap, right? Because, I don't want the free feed losers to suffer. They're not the free feed sufferers, okay? They're just missing out on all the fun, juicy bits. So we're going to recap in case you didn't sign up yet. But in Barbie, one of the themes was contact through multiple dimensions, you know, because Barbie was all about transferring between the two worlds of Barbie Land and the real world. Well, Oppenheimer is about going into the atomic structures of the real world, the quantum world, the hidden realm. We also had the reconciliation of opposing forces and a homunculus Barbie theory. And I even said on the show, on the Barbie show, because I hadn't seen Oppenheimer yet, I said, is Oppenheimer the opposing masculine forces? I think it will be. And yes, I was right. Of course, you silly goose. You knew I was right. You know I was going to be right. Because this Oppenheimer movie is all male gaze-ish, right? Because you don't get the feeling, like Christopher Nolan didn't portray Oppenheimer to be a bad guy. He seemed like this sort of misunderstood genius is what you feel like. You know? But you don't think he's a creep. But like, this dude's out banging chicks. His wife's home taking care of crying babies. And the one time she says, look, I need a break. He's like, I'll give you a break. And he takes the kid and gives him to his friend. So there, you take him. He's up, you know, he's at work all day blowing shit up with the fellas. And you even hear a joke in Oppenheimer. Matt Damon asks Oppenheimer why he doesn't have a new. He's like, look, you're so smart. Why don't you have a Nobel Prize yet? Oppenheimer says, maybe I'll get one for building the atomic bomb. And Damon says, they're going to give you a Nobel Prize for building a bomb? And Oppenheimer says, yeah, Alfred Nobel invented dynamite. And the point is this. It's a male-gazed-oriented film about valuing destruction and warfare. The archetype of male dominance and warrior tropes. They make jokes. Literally, they make jokes about how this could have made a chain reaction that would have killed all of us. Watching the atmosphere burn up in a nuclear holocaust as we all die. And they went ahead and did it. Now, thank God it didn't happen like that, right? And I get it, right? Science isn't perfect all the time. Sometimes you take your best stab at it, reduce your risks. You know, I'm not trying to be irrational about it. But you can't deny that this is a very male-oriented film. I'm not saying women can't enjoy it or whatever. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying Oppenheimer is about male warfare, fire. Barbie is about the opposing forces of the feminine nature and trying to find inclusion. I mean, granted, there's the patriarchy thing, and they kind of, whatever, right? But by the end of the movie, they, you know, try to throw the men a bone. Now, it's interesting that we have these two movies, because Barbie is about manifesting goddess female energy into our world, and Oppenheimer is about how they really did manifest destructive forces in the world, the most destructive the world has ever seen. Like, we love the male dominance so much, it's going to kill us. We can't resist. And of course, you know, we're going to talk about Jack Parsons. Finally, Jack Parsons. I was hoping we'd get some Parsons love on the movie, but all we got was one mention of JPL. It's the closest we got, because we wouldn't have the rockets used to make modern day nuclear weapons work without the Antichrist Jack Parsons himself. You could even argue that there's a homunculus element in Oppenheimer that we didn't really see, because as the story goes, Jack Parsons, who is very much an occult magician type, if you don't know who Jack Parsons is, I did, I believe, 3 episodes just a couple months ago with my wife, Josie, on our other podcast called Breaking Social Norms. Very different format. It's very conversational, opinion-based, but I walked her through who Jack Parsons was and why he's important to the realm of the occult. Check those out. That was just a few months ago we did those on Breaking Social Norms. But he was alleged to have tried to infuse a spirit at the Trinity site. This is, I mean, it's a wild theory, right? Because they had this big container called the Jumbo. Because in the world of explosives and bombs, you got to have an explosive chain. You have to have a small explosion before the bigger one. That's why you've got primers, boosters, and bursters. For the first atomic bomb, they used TNT to initiate the chain reaction to blow up the plutonium. But the issue, they thought, and you hear about this in the movie, is that they're like, look, what if the plutonium doesn't ignite and instead we just blow plutonium over the whole land instead of igniting it? So they thought, well, one way we could counter this is by putting it inside of this big jumbo 200-ton metal encasement. That way, if the plutonium doesn't ignite, it'll just spread in the thing, good to go, we'll bury it. But there's a conspiracy that, you know, I'm not saying I fully believe it, but they think that Jack Parsons' magical alchemy ideas of infusing a spirit through an explosion into a golem, an inanimate object, was done by, he wanted to put a homunculus inside the jumbo. Because Jack Parsons actually did try to channel a female goddess of Babylon in his rituals, the Babylon working rituals, drawing a spirit in from another realm with which he could then impregnate and incarnate the Antichrist to again create the new world, destroy the old one. So in a way, Barbie maybe could have manifested in the movie into the real world in such a manner, but they didn't quite show us that way. And you didn't see the jumbo in Oppenheimer, but if you listen closely, you could hear about how they say, like, look, what if the plutonium just showers the desert? We don't want that. And then, I lied. I have one more topic. Ben Shapiro. We talked about in the Barbie show, we talked about Ben Shapiro's take on Barbie. He said, oh, it's the worst thing he's ever seen in his whole life. Oppenheimer is a far superior film. Okay. And why did he hate it? Well, there's many reasons. But the one that I'll pull out for this, for the Oppenheimer show, he's like, look, Barbie alienates men from women. It destroys the traditional family structure. Barbie's promoting that. That's what he said. Okay. Well, what? Okay. And then he made a video about how great Oppenheimer was. And what did the relationships look like? What did this great traditional family values look like in Oppenheimer? Oppenheimer was cheating on his wife. His wife that he stole. His wife was already married and he stole her. And then worse yet, he's still cheating on her on top of all that with a communist of all things, Ben Shapiro. And even though his wife stuck with him, she was kind of like a tougher dude than he was the whole time. She's like, dude, you need to stand up and fight for yourself. These guys are trying to tear you down. And she tried to fight for him. She found out he was cheating on her this whole time, until the only reason he stopped is because old girl killed herself. But the whole movie, there's virtually no love at all. There's no positive relationship vibe here. When he in one scene, he's going to leave her to go to the Trinity site to actually do the atomic bomb test, the big, you know, the biggest move of his life, the biggest move of his career, the one that might kill all of us. And the army jeep pulls up. He's leaving the house with his little briefcase. She's hanging up clothes on the clothesline, as Ben Shapiro would love, right? That's what he wants. And he walks right past her. And she's like, hey, what's going on? And he's like, I'm going to go do a big test. But he can't tell her, right? It's top secret. And he says, I'll tell you what, I'll send a phone call your way and tell you to pull the sheets in if it was a success. And then he keeps walking. And she's like, hey, Oppenheimer. She says, hey, break a leg, buddy. And he looks at her and he turns around and keeps walking. Not a hug, not a kiss, nothing. He just leaves her ass to do the laundry while he goes and blows shit up, right? Just a bro hanging with the bros. And he was very ungrateful to his wife. She's constantly fighting for him, constantly standing up for him while he's getting verbally assaulted by everyone. I'm like, dude, his wife is kind of a badass for him, and he's in his head the whole time. He's kind of like one of those genius introverted guys, I guess. But the point is this. I told you on the Barbie show, I said, there seems to be some kind of weird male red pill movement of traditional guys promoting traditional relationships. Because they use my precious conspiracy theories to support their wrong arguments about things. And I believe they're just being sexist. And Shapiro's a great example. He glorifies Oppenheimer because, oh, this is when America was great and relationships were great and traditional marriage was great. Everyone was happy. You know, guys didn't have to hang out with their complaining wives. They just got to go out and bang mistresses all day and go to work. Wife can deal with the kids and the cooking and the cleaning. In fact, they build a Los Alamos town and Oppenheimer takes his wife to the house and she's like, dickhead, there's no kitchen. And he's like, oh, yeah. I forgot, because it's so beneath him, right? I mean, it's wild, dude. There's that literal scene where he comes home, the baby's crying, and he's like, are you going to do something about that crying-ass baby? And his wife's like, he's been crying all day. It's your turn. So he dumps his ass off. Is that the family values we need to embrace and go back to, I guess? I don't know. Back when they used to see babies on the front steps of fire stations? Is that what they want? It's just wild, right? And apparently that really happened in real life. He really dropped off his 2-month-old baby with some communist friends of his. But, you know, Ben Shapiro, oh, Oppenheimer's a brilliant film. Which, you know, honestly surprises me. Because my take on the film was about how it was Oppenheimer being torn between his sort of commie liberal views of humanity and kind of wishing he wasn't creating this weapon of mass destruction, and how his scientific work and his genius abilities actually contributed to this thing that he didn't really want it to contribute to. So, I don't know. Oppenheimer died of throat cancer in 1967. Maybe he was sleeping around too much. That's what was that dude that the throat cancer, what was his name? Said he got it from munching too much box. What was his name? Oh, I can't think of his name. Wasn't it Michael Douglas? He said that. But anyway, there you go. Oppenheimer. I don't know, we're getting off the rails here. Oppenheimer. It was a film. Now look, and that's it. That's the conclusion of Oppenheimer. I wish there was more there. I was hoping we'd see some wild explosion scene. I was hoping we'd see some Jack Parsons occult stuff. Didn't quite get it. Was it a good film? Absolutely. It was a good film. Definitely worth seeing once. Definitely worth seeing once. I'll give it that. But look, if you like this podcast, if you like this episode, if you made it this far and you haven't turned me off because you hate what I'm saying, then you're my people, all right? You got to listen to the Barbie show. had a couple of comments on, and that was a supporters only bonus show, because once a month I do a bonus shows for the supporter feeds. And on Patreon, more than one comment, a couple comments from people saying it was the best show I ever did. That's out of 500 episodes, over 500. Thank you for that, by the way, because I read most of the Patreon comments. And I got to say, when I got done with it, it was a 2-hour show. It's probably the longest I've ever actually done. And it felt like it was a special show. I thought, man, this was pretty good when I released it. So it was good to see the positive feedback. It's almost criminal that I don't drop it fully on the free feed. But you can get a 49-minute preview of it. You get almost half of it on the free feed. But anyway, yeah. Sometimes the shows, they're the atomic banger. And on the bonus feed. And that's just the way it goes, man. Deal's a deal. You give me $5 a month, I'm giving you ad-free. I'm giving you a bonus show every month. And right now, you get in, you get the Twin Peaks bonus episodes too. My goodness. You get the other. So you got to hear the other half of the Barbenheimer story here. You got to hear the Barbie. Go watch the Barbie movie, which is going to be better. And then listen to the Barbie show. Because we talk about all the symbolism there. I mean, it's going to blow your mind. So there you go. You already know the deal. The links are always in the show notes. Most popular supporter feed is patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. But anyway, you know the deal. You know where to go. Until next time, stay woke.